R. Kelly trial is underway in Chicago. In New York right now. It started here in Chicago earlier. There was, many years ago, there was a trial, and he was not found guilty in that situation. Now, this is a much larger case with many more alleged victims coming forward. The American R&B star went on trial accused of using his entourage to lure victims over more than two decades. The singer denies all charges, with his legal team saying the allegations come from disgruntled groupies. Just looking here at the Tribune article, the very first witness in the R. Kelly trial is from Chicago, confronting him on the stand and testifying he abused her when she was just 16 years old. Half her lifetime ago, Gerhonda Johnson Pace was a teenaged R. Kelly superfan, the story goes, a member of his MySpace fan club, so devoted that she went to the Cook County Criminal Courthouse in 2008 to show support for him during his first criminal case. Andy noticed her, thanked her for her support, once wished her a happy early birthday. She was about to turn 15 this week. 13 years later, 800 miles away, Pace faced Kelly at another courthouse, and this time as the first witness against him in a federal racketeering case that could see him locked up for life. That continues. Steve Greenberg, you've been you've represented R. Kelly in the past. You still represent him in some capacity, Steve?
Yes, I still represent him in the cases in Illinois, the state cases and the federal case.
Mm-hmm. A lot of scrutiny on R. Kelly. There was a documentary about him. There are a lot more victims that have come forward, a lot more folks sort of corroborating the same story over and over that we had heard about in Chicago many, many years ago. What do you make of what we're hearing now, what we're seeing on the stand?
Well, first of all, I think you got to use the word documentary loosely. It was a bunch of people telling stories, but there was really none of the follow-up where they were looking for the facts to back it up. That's what the prosecutions are for, and that's what they involve, and that's why we have trials and we have cross-examination so we can get to the bottom of things and people don't just say whatever they're going to say. You know, I've been following some of the testimony. It's hard because there's no live feed, and so you're reliant on people tweeting during the court break. I have some familiarity with this witness because she's also supposedly in one of the Illinois pending cases in state court. And some of her allegations, you know, there are things that people are going to back up what she said. She made diary entries and so forth. Some of it just strike me as preposterous, like she was locked in a room that had a bathroom and yet for 3 days was not allowed to go to the bathroom at all. Pee in a cup, pee in a toilet, pee anywhere. That just doesn't seem credible to me.
But you hear that from so many others, too, that he did these mind control games with these young women who are half his age or younger, and certainly not of the legal age of consent in some cases. And that story is not unique in that she's the only one telling it. You've certainly heard it from other folks.
You have heard it from other folks, but all of these people were gathered together when they made that film about him. All of these people, or almost all of these people, it can be demonstrated, have been in communication with each other. A lot of it was through the Clarys and Savages hooking the people up and matching them up and talking to them about their stories. And again, that's what we have trials for. So let's see what happens at a trial and what story is told at a trial. Some of it, I don't know, maybe it's just me and I look at things sort of oddly. I don't think that anyone cannot go to the bathroom, not urinate, for 3 days. I just, some stuff, you know, just strikes me, whether 100 people say it or one person says it, is just not a believable fact.
Well, to me, it just seems as if we do hear a lot about the mind control, the things he would do with very young women, just to control them and tell them what they were allowed to do. You've heard from their relatives and family members who say they weren't allowed to call, he took away cell phones, that he cut them off entirely from the rest of the world, and that he totally has this controlling, abusive way about him, and that's who he was, that's what he did.
That's not necessarily criminal. That's not...
If they're underage, that is criminal. That's what this is about, right?
Well, that's what it's about, and that's why you have a trial. And I wonder, and I'm not trying to victim blame or anything like that, or accuser blame, I guess, is the more appropriate term, but Where were the parents when things were supposedly going on? Where was this young lady's family when, if she was underage and she wasn't coming home for days on end, looking into it, wondering what was going on, and stuff like that? So again, let's see what the evidence plays out, and when the people are cross-examined, and what the 12 people sitting in the jury box think about them.
Some of the parents there have said that they didn't know where their kids were, and they weren't allowed to communicate with them. But you're right about that. Let's see what they say. There's been a lot out there publicly, and one of the things I want to ask you about is that the charges in this case seem highly unusual, and certainly nothing like what he originally faced back in 2008 back here in Chicago, that Cook County trial I mentioned earlier. What is he facing? Racketeering and 8 counts of violating the Mann Act. I don't often hear of this stuff in relation to crimes of this way. I mean, crimes that are like this. Can you explain it to us?
Right. Sure. By using the RICO statute, they're able to accomplish a couple of things. First of all, the prosecutors are able to bring in a lot more evidence and repetition. If things were charged singularly for each crime, then each crime would have its own trial, and that jury would just hear about that one incident. So what the prosecutors are doing by using the RICO law is they're doing exactly what you said. A lot of people are saying the same thing, and then they're going to get up in closing argument. They're going to say to the jurors, look, you didn't hear this from one person. You heard it from many people, the same thing, and sort of each person by telling the same story, gee, they must be truthful. The other reason that they've done it this way is it's enabled them to do two things. One, charge misdemeanors, which the Mann Act then makes federal felonies. So state court misdemeanors, which really means they aren't that significant criminally, but they've made them significant. And it's also allowed them to circumvent the statute of limitations, because in a RICO prosecution, the statute of limitations begins running when there's the last act of the conspiracy, whereas if these were brought separately, if these charges were each brought separately, they would be subject to the traditional 3 or 5 year statute of limitations. Mm-hmm. So the Aaliyah allegations, that statute of limitations expired in the 90s, but by including it in the RICO prosecution, you've extended that statute and can do it now.
Yeah, and
very,
you're
creative.
Well, creative, some would say that this is kind of like a long time coming, that this is what this is chickens coming home to roost when you have this many people in his history. You mentioned Aaliyah. R. Kelly and Aaliyah met when she was 12. At 14, she recorded an album called Age Ain't Nothing But a Number. He produced that. He produced it. And they secretly married in 94 when she was 15 using a forged ID. That case is well documented. She was not of age. They were together. They got married. She became pregnant, or he feared that she was going to become pregnant. And they say that that's why he married her. So this goes way, way, way back to then. Again, we'll let the jury decide. How is this different than the Chicago case that sounds like you're involved with, Steve?
Well, so the remaining federal case in Chicago, the allegation is that he obstructed justice by paying off witnesses to not testify at his state court trial back in the 2000s. And in that case, he's charged with a couple of other people. And, you know, we'll see what happens in this case, and then we'll figure out how we're going to address that case.
And when is the one in Chicago? When would that one start?
It's set for status in September, I suspect, because everyone's trial schedules are a mess as a result of the pandemic slowdown, that case wouldn't see the inside of a courtroom until next summer or fall.
Mm-hmm. How are things going with that? Just on a side note, the trial's getting started again. I keep hearing about that they are started, but that it is slow.
It is slow because a couple of different things. One, you're only doing one trial per floor, whereas at 26th Street, they could do four before, or in federal court, the same thing. They could do four on a floor. So that slows it way down. You've got a huge backlog of people that are in custody. And then, frankly, you've got the jury pool. People don't want to be jurors. You know, the people who I guess, think COVID isn't real or that they're immune to it are the people who show up for jury service in large part. And frankly, from a defense attorney perspective, those are not the people that you want on your jury.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be a little bit more right-wing and conservative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting how that might skew juries. I hadn't even thought of that. So we'll have to see what happens there. Your right to a fair trial would involve having a jury of your peers. And you're right, if it skews in any direction at all, it probably is not.
Well, that's not considered a jury that is not your peers. A jury of your peers just means people selected from the community. They don't have to think like you, look like you, act like you, or anything like that. But any defense attorney worth his salt is going to try and delay because they know that the pickings aren't going to be very good.
Hmm. Steve, thank you. Thanks for the time today.
Okay. Thanks, Anna.
Attorney Steve.
Well.
You too, Attorney Steve Greenberg there. He's one of R. Kelly's attorneys, not in the New York case, but in the upcoming, whenever it happens, Chicago trial.